if we are kind to those who are doing what is wrong, isn't there a danger that some will conclude that we agree with and even support that which we actually oppose? Welcome to The Good Word. We are continuing a series on the fruit of the Spirit, and today we are talking about kindness. Our conversation partners are again Lee Power and Paul Digdahl, fellow teachers in the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, let me unpack my question just a little bit. Some time ago, I was talking with a person who is a former Adventist, an unhappy former Adventist, and he had adopted a very evangelistic approach towards convincing Adventists that the way of their life was wrong. And I was talking with him on the phone because I'd put quite a bit of effort in trying to understand these people who escaped with such anger from the community that they were once a part. And as I talked to him, at one point he said, I take it that you're moving away from mainstream Adventism. And it shocked me because I thought that he could tell by the tenor of my comments that I was still very supportive of Adventism. But it really startled me to think that the rumor could be going out that because I was nice to him, that I was actually supporting his particular position. So that's what lies behind my question. Is it possible that we could be too gentle, too kind, and maybe we want to look for some synonyms there that would help us out there, in circumstances where we need to plant our flag a little more firmly, a little more clearly, so that by gentle words we do not lead people astray? Give me some help.
Well, what comes to mind is, and I think the answer is yes, we do run that risk, but if we look to our primary example in Scripture, who would be Jesus, he was certainly accused of the same thing because of the people he kept company with. But I think for Christians, and Adventists are, you know, I hate to use the word pride ourselves, because pride in itself is a sin, but we pride ourselves on being law-keeping people. We keep the law of God. And yet, if the ultimate law of God is love, oftentimes we find people who are not keeping the law the way we think they should, and we do not then treat them with that law of love. And that can be a hard thing, because we're afraid if I accept them, it means I accept what they are doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to do that. Christ did.
Paul?
Yeah, I just would agree that certainly there's a danger. As I treat others that I disagree with, mm-hmm. with kindness, there will be some who will assume that I have agree with those that I'm being kind to. And everything you said, Aline, I agree. That's a problem that Christ faced as well.
But is there a greater danger if we don't, is the danger to our reputation worse than the danger of not showing kindness and love?
Well, that's always a judgment call. Coming back to the passage you mentioned before, answer a fool according to his folly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't answer a fool. Right. I think this kind only comes out by prayer, if we could paraphrase Jesus, because it is not clear. Now, in a classroom situation, I face that most vividly when I'm teaching a writing class. As if I don't mark the errors, students will conclude, you didn't mark that, it must be okay.
Hmm.
But if I mark too many, then they just throw up their hands.
Yeah, it's
hopeless.
And
they just can't do anything. So there's always this judgment call of how much will I correct here. And that's, I think, is a story of Scripture, especially in the Old Testament, where God comes to these wild people. And you can always see him scratching his head, saying, how far can I take these people?
Mm-hmm. But it's true not just with kindness, isn't it? But with every virtue, when we make that a part of our lives, it opens us up to misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. People will have questions. I think that's true not just of kindness, but of others as well.
Now, there's one issue that I want to deal with. And it's a difficult one, because there are passages of Scripture that suggest this, and I want to focus in on 1 Corinthians 5, a very challenging chapter from Paul. Let me get against the background here of Matthew 5, 43-48, that emphasizes that God is gracious to the good and the evil alike. He lets the sun shine on them both. He puts his rain on both. And in Luke, It actually says that he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. So you have this very positive emphasis. But now in 1 Corinthians 5, it is such a stark contrast because it's the same book that has 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient and kind. But in chapter 5, Paul counsels them, there's a man who's been living with his father's wife, and he says, hand this man over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, so that his spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord. And he finishes the end of that section. He says, I'm writing you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of brother or sister who is sexually immoral or greedy. So you have the basis for shunning. Now, in our larger world, you have in Mormon history, and you have currently in Jehovah's Witnesses, and the Amish are all known for practicing shunning. And we were all astonished when the Amish school was attacked. They were incredibly gracious and forgiving to the attacker. But this is the same community that practices shunning. So help me with 1 Corinthians 5. What's going on here? Is this apparently, in some cases, a necessary thing to separate?
Well, I wonder if we really understood the climate in the Corinthian church. Most of the believers had come out of a lifestyle that we cannot even understand as Christians today. And they're new Christians, and they're still trying to balance what it looks like, what it feels like to live a Christian life. And I think Paul is very concerned that if they accept this man and what he's doing, it will influence them perhaps to go back to the ways that they were. So I think the climate in the Corinthian church is something we need to take account of in Paul's letter.
Yeah. He may not be describing here a broad principle or practice that should be adopted by all, but it's dealing with that specific situation. And I would just say, too, that kindness, I think we need to be careful. Kindness doesn't mean being nice or friendly. Kindness, it may be kind to discipline someone or to censure someone, not to post bail. That may be an act of kindness. We have their ultimate good in mind.
In fact, Ellen White uses the phrase, a cruel kindness, where she gets precisely at that point. You are soft when you should be firm. So kindness in the fruit of the Spirit gets it right. But I think often if we see it as being too soft.
Too soft. And one definition I found was it's a tender concern for others. And I think that goes along with what Paul has said, that it may not always look like kindness because that concern, and it's the same sort of mercy and kindness God has for us. His ultimate goal is for us to be in heaven with him. And so the road may not always look like sweet nothings along the way.
Right.
Well, I do think also that the example of Jesus, and you alluded to this a while before, Aline, that Jesus could do things that we can't. I think somehow in the mysteries of the Incarnation, Jesus gave wonderful examples of how it should be done. But once you move beyond that, even in the New Testament, there are situations that are difficult for challenges. And I think particularly in authoritarian cultures, this practice of shunning is one which works. So if you come to a culture that's used to doing that, to a certain extent, you have to work within the framework of what they consider to be right and wrong, at least initially.
Well, you know, I think it's in Yancey's book, What's So Amazing About Grace, if I'm not mistaken, he begins the book with the story of an unwed pregnant mother. And she's so distraught, and somebody says, well, why don't you go to church? And she says, that is the last place I would ever go, because that's where I feel the most guilt and the most condemned. And I think if we're going to err, it seems that we should err on the side of mercy. Because if you can't be accepted there, you know, I mean, that story really breaks your heart when you realize there's a part of that in all of us. To respond that way. That's a natural response without the Spirit. Without the Spirit, we have a condemning attitude.
You know, I was struck again, by a book that we read recently, and we've read it before, but Shantung Compound by Langdon Gilkey. He pointed out how difficult it was for the conservative missionaries to deal with the rest of culture because of their lifestyle concerns. You know, they had very careful lifestyles, and very similar to ones that Adventists would say would be important. But he said the one notable exception were the Salvation Army people. They were able to hold to their standards, but at the same time be gracious in dealing with others who didn't hold those same standards. And Gilkey suggested that it was probably because they were so used to dealing with people with problems. And it seems to me that that's terribly important, that we give our standards a real-life test so that we can somehow hold to our own positions, but then be gracious with others. Now, one more question here, and the time is going to catch us if we're not careful. It seems to me that one could make an argument that kindness is the touchstone for being right with God. And I'm thinking here of this amazing chapter in Desire of Ages. It's a comment on the parable of the sheep and the goats. And this is one passage that has been had a positive influence, I think, on Adventist thinking, because it has allowed us to be more open to those who's willing in recognizing that God will recognize even those without the right label. Let me just read a few lines here. It's Desire of Ages, page 638. Those whom Christ commends in the judgment may have known little of theology, but they have cherished his principles. Through the influence of the divine spirit, they have been a blessing to those about them. Even among the heathen are those who have cherished the spirit of kindness. Before the words of life had fallen upon their ears, they have befriended the missionaries, even ministering to them at the peril of their own lives. Among the heathen are those who worship God ignorantly, those to whom the light is never brought by human instrumentality, yet they will not perish. Now, is that true that kindness, wherever it is found, is a fruit of the Spirit?
I would say yes. You know, I think when we see these inactions, these fruit of the Spirit in people's lives, we have to sense the hand of God working, even if he is not acknowledged. Because every good thing comes from God.
Absolutely.
Paul, do you have any experience in this? I'm catching you by surprise here, but in Asia, where you saw people who did not except Jesus Christ, but yet demonstrated fruits of the Spirit.
And, you know, too many to recount. I think of my time in refugee camp in Thailand. This has now been a number of years back. But people, many of them with a Buddhist background, not professed Christians, undergoing a lot of suffering themselves, living in want, hungry, and so forth. And I would come into that refugee camp each day as a Christian, but the kindness that they showed to me was just amazing. I think it was from God, although they may not have recognized even what I saw as the source of love. They definitely showed me the kindness of love.
Maybe in conclusion, we could tuck in that amazing verse, 1 John 2:29, that whoever does what is right has been born of God. You're doing the right thing, even if you don't know it. You've been born of God. Well, thank you very much, Paul and Aline. This is Paul's last time this time around, so we're very grateful for your help in these first six lessons, Paul.
Thank you for the chance.
And my thanks to Michael White, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For a good word, I'm Alden Thompson. One of the pieces of good news about the good word is that you can listen to it again if you want. You can go to the Positive Life Radio website, plr.org, under programs, listed Good Word. There you can tap in, and you can listen to your heart's content. You can also order a CD for it. All of that is available at the plr.org Positive Life Radio website.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.